The Knoxville Symphony Orchestra has recently resumed performances this spring, offering concert experiences from the comfort of your own home via live stream. The next performance takes place on Thursday, April 22nd at 7:30 p.m., brought to you from the Tennessee Theater. The symphony will perform Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony, three Botticelli pictures by Respighi, and Ligeti's Romanian Concerto. And here with me today through the magic of Zoom to talk to me about this concert is Maestro Aram Demirjian, Music Director of the KSO. It's great to talk to you today, Aram. Wonderful to see you.
Hi, Melanie. It's great to see you too. And I think this might be the last one we do over Zoom because I think I'll be in vaccinated safety enough to come into the studio again by the time we do this again.
Excellent. I'm getting my second vaccine tomorrow, so I'm really excited for that. Well, first of all, I'm very curious about this programming of this concert. Is there a common thread among these pieces? Why did you decide to pair them together?
I mean, if I'm going to be honest, you know, there are some concerts that really have a solid through line to them that is thematic on some level or extra musical. I mean, I think everybody knows that I enjoy doing programs like that. And there are some concerts where you program it because all the pieces are wonderful on their own merits and they sound nice next to each other. And I would say that this program is a little bit more the latter than the former. It certainly started off with the Italian connection of the Mendelssohn and the Respighi. And actually, those two pieces were both imports from canceled concerts earlier in this season. Those are two pieces that have been on our must program as soon as possible bucket list for a while. So it was sad to see them potentially go. But then once we realized that, you know, the size of the orchestra featured on the Masterworks concerts was going to be smaller, it just seemed like a really ideal spot to drop them in. And then we needed a piece to fill out the rest of the program that was of the right duration. And Ligeti's Romanian Concerto is just, it's a piece that I love. And it's for the right-sized orchestra. It's high energy. It has a lightness and a richness of tone color palette that it shares, I think, with the Mendelssohn and with the Respighi. Certainly, there's not an Italian connection there. But for the most part, this just seemed like a great program for springtime. There's a verve. There's a brightness to all of these pieces. We tend to feel a little bit of lift at this time of year with the changing of the season. And it just seemed like a set of three pieces that fit right into it.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And I think it's coming at a time when we're all kind of looking for that lift as well. So I think that will definitely be a welcome energy. And to me, you know, I was trying to figure out what the connection was. And it was almost like traveling through music for me, you know, with the Italian Symphony of Mendelssohn, and then the three Botticelli pictures as well. And then with the Romanian Concerto, there's a folk music connection there. Mm-hmm. So actually, yeah, let's talk more about the Romanian Concerto. Can you tell us a little more about this piece?
So this is by Ligeti, who, if you're coming from Mendelssohn, the name Ligeti might be a little bit scary for you. But I would say this is one of Ligeti's less experimental works. And I love the music of Ligeti. I mean, and if you enjoy the soundtrack to 2001, A Space Odyssey, you love the music of Ligeti as well. But Ligeti wrote this piece between 1949 and 1951, following travels through Transylvania and on to Bucharest. He always had a genuine interest in folk music, much like his Hungarian counterpart and forebear, Béla Bartók. And there are certainly a number of folk elements in this piece, not a whole lot of direct quotation. There's a lot of Ligeti as much as there is Romanian folk music in the piece. To our 2021 sensibilities, there's nothing I would say that is challenging in this piece. It's a burst of energy. There are moments when it's gritty. By and large, I would just say it rocks. And there are also moments of just transcendent lyricism to it as well. But it really, it's like a headbanger, you know, as far as orchestra music goes. But at that time, 1951, its performance was canceled after the first rehearsal.
That is amazing to me. Why was it canceled?
Because it was objectionable. he was composing music at a time and under a regime where there were a lot of state mandated limitations on what type of music was appropriate to write and what type of music wasn't appropriate to write. It didn't receive its premiere until 1971.
And the three Botticelli pictures by Respighi, what inspired Respighi to compose this work?
Respighi became known really for his Italian-inspired works, and particularly his Roman-inspired works. When we think of Respighi, the thing that jumps to the front of our mind is Pines of Rome, Fountains of Rome, Roman festivals, leaning in to that part of his identity. He both created some really great music, and it also happened to be really good for business for him. I actually don't know what the direct inspiration for the Botticelli triptych is, but it is certain, you know, it's inspired by three timeless Botticelli paintings, La Primavera, Spring, The Adoration of the Magi, and The Birth of Venus. I think once again, you have three sort of atmospheric depictions of the three paintings. In Spring, in La Primavera, you really have sort of a bubbling energy that comes through the painting, and also a sense of the various characters and characterizations that are in the painting. You have a more literal reference in The Adoration of the Magi to something that might be a little bit more familiar and out of season for us right now. The main melody for Adoration of the Magi is the theme from O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, almost an ancient Gregorian chant-like presentation of it that's very haunting. And then The Birth of Venus begins from nothing, grows to a peak musically, and then fades away to nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it almost feels like in a lot of Respighi's works, it's like a celebration of the wonderful things about Italy. And speaking of music that celebrates wonderful things about Italy, Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony, it's been said that this work isn't intended to be a literal depiction of Italy, but rather an evocation of its spirit, energy, and atmosphere. So I'm curious, what does this music bring to mind for you when you hear it?
You know, Mendelssohn would often draw on his travels. Certainly the Italian Symphony was inspired by a trip that he took to Italy that just filled him with inspiration, as you said. Same with his Third Symphony, the Scottish Symphony. I mean, Italy seems to be a source of inspiration to a lot of composers of the 19th century. And it is one of these locations where there's art in the air and there's art coming out of every crevice and every stone structure. So it's very easy to see where that level of inspiration came from. I personally, at least, I don't feel Italy terribly literally. I've actually never been to Italy. That's probably something I shouldn't be admitting.
You have to go.
I've been to almost every country surrounding it and in its vicinity, but somehow I've never been to Italy before.
Wow.
Probably this piece, actually, more than any other, I associate with just the life and the liveliness that Mendelssohn described. There's just an evergreen freshness, I feel like, about this piece, especially the first movement, the opening. And there's a reason why we're opening this concert with the big symphony instead of closing it. That first movement almost seems like the best overture that Mendelssohn ever wrote. There's something about that first movement. It has a sense of occasion about it, but not solemn occasion, very, very festive occasion. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because probably my first awareness of that music wasn't through Mendelssohn or actually playing it, but because it's been the background music to who knows how many commercials for how many different things. And it seems like the right music for the time of year that we're in. And then certainly the last movement, I think you've actually probably got more of Italy contained in the middle two movements than in the outer two movements, but the outer two movements are the ones that are going to be the most familiar. And certainly in the last movement, the Saltarello, almost like a pirate's dance, that's a staple for orchestras. That's in the party piece list of every orchestra. You pull it out, you slap it on the stands, and you let it rip. It's very fun.
Have you conducted this one before?
I've conducted the last movement many, many, many times before, and I've conducted the first movement a few times before, but this will actually be my first time conducting the whole symphony. It should be a good time.
Well, we haven't had a chance to chat since the symphony has reconvened. So what was that moment like for you at that first rehearsal when you saw the members of the orchestra and then you all were finally able to make music together once again?
It's been really special to be back on stage, to be performing, to be back, with my colleagues. It is not lost on me or any of us just how much of a privilege it is to be making music in a time like this. We feel very fortunate to be performing again together, and for our audiences, we feel very grateful for the degree to which Knoxville has stuck with us through a very challenging time. And we started off performing without audiences, and there was something very special about that, actually. We would have these streaming concerts. It's an obviously a strange feeling to be playing without an audience in the house, to be dressed up in our concert dress and to not have an audience there. This whole pandemic experience has hammered home my feeling that I've always had, which is an audience really completes the music making experience. An audience is a part of the music making experience, and you notice an audience's absence. There is a participation and an energy in the room that is just missing.
Yeah, absolutely.
That nothing but an audience can create. But that said, there were some really special moments, especially at the end of these no audience streaming concerts, where you know that something needs to happen so that the closing credits on the stream can happen, the picture fades out, the microphone turns off. And so what will wind up happening is the concert ends, we bow to nobody, and then we stand there waiting for the stream to end in complete silence. And finally from backstage, somebody calls, you know, cut, and we're out. And every time that happened without an audience, everybody in the room would just break out into spontaneous applause for each other. And there was this really kind of a wonderful flavor of camaraderie that we don't necessarily get to experience typically at the end of a concert with audience, because there's so much ceremony that's happening at the end of the concert. Those were the best memories that I actually took away from no audiences. And then when audiences came back, I knew that it was going to be special. I didn't know just how emotional I would feel stepping out on stage for that first time with a live audience. And I really did have to like take a second and compose myself before I started talking into the microphone. And what has been really heartwarming is that that level of reception from the audience, you know, just the joy. And I mean, we at least feel incredibly loved and feel incredible gratitude coming from the audience. That has not abated from concert to concert. I mean, every concert that we've had with live audience, there's just been such an incredible energy coming from the reduced number of people in there. And I hope as we go forward and audiences start to expand back to more of what we're used to, that every concert is just going to be a celebration like that.
Definitely. I mean, I know for me, live performance and the KSO has definitely been very missed. And, you know, it's something that you sort of take for granted. Yeah, sure. You know, I'll go hear the symphony this Friday night or whatever. And then when you couldn't do that, it's like this gaping hole, and it makes you appreciate it and cherish it that much more, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I can only speak for myself, but during that time of not being able to perform, you really begin to reflect on what the art form and, you know, what the practice of performing with an orchestra means to you. And I mean, I've been very happy that it feels like we really haven't missed an artistic step coming back. Nobody really knew what it was going to feel like coming back, but I feel like we've actually grown artistically as a result of this experience and the challenges of staying silent, and then the challenges of adjusting to all of these new circumstances with social distancing and everything. As we've come back, it forces us to listen in different ways. It forces us to rehearse on a very condensed schedule. So it's going to be really interesting when we're sort of back to more of the usual model, how what we've gained from the muscles we've had to flex in these challenges is going to translate when we have more time and more space and more people on stage.
Yeah, all good points there. Maestro Aram Demirjian, it's so wonderful to talk with you again about music, and I'm so excited that the Knoxville Symphony Orchestra is able to perform once again.
Thanks, Melanie.
Once again, the Knoxville Symphony Orchestra performs this Thursday, April 22nd at 7:30 p.m. The concert will be available via live stream brought to you from the Tennessee Theater. Tickets and information are available online at knoxvillesymphony.com.
Thank you.